I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I miss you. What's good, internet? It is Austin Walker here coming to you live from the Brick House. Brooklyn. You already know what it is. Vice HQ. It is December 9th, 2016. I think that date is right.
You're right.
Welcome to Waypoint Radio. We have a lot to talk about today, I think.
We have a ton to talk about.
I like, you're a good hype man. Because, I have no idea what we're talking about.
We've got a lot.
But you were like, we got shit to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
Danielle Riendo joining me.
Hello.
Patrick Klepek joining me. Tim Barnes, our audio producer.
Tim Barnes is also in the house.
Say hi, Tim.
Hello.
People can hear you because this is a wide stereo speaker.
That's right. Wide stereo. Coming to you in wide stereo.
I'll keep my comments to a minimum.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Tim.
Tim knows. Tim's good.
Patrick. It sounded like you had a thing to say.
Did you see the reveal of the name of the new Fast and Furious film?
Oh,
I did not. Hold me.
Let me put. I don't want to get it wrong. I don't want to get it wrong.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah. You're gonna be precise.
Okay. So Fast 8, right? Fate of the Furious.
Ooh.
Huh.
Get it?
Is it F8? Is it written that way?
No, it's not.
Oh.
Which is
okay.
A missed opportunity.
Yeah, really.
But there will definitely just be like F8 logos on Facebook
yeah.
or on like cats.
I thought you said cats for a second.
On cats in the spray paint cats.
Definitely.
They're going to come through and just.
Cats wearing hats with fate, F8.
That's a whole thing.
That's good.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So how's it going? How's your week been? Our week.
Well, we sure had
long.
A week.
for people who don't know, because they only listen to the podcast, we try to do a stream on Wednesday. We were going to do a stream from the UK where Mike Diver, our UK editor, or our editor in there, senior editor in the UK, was going to do a live stream from a pub, which is a thing that happens in the UK all the time, I understand. There's lots of pubs. They're just everywhere. So there's live streams just nonstop. Yeah. And someone drilled through the electrical wire, the power cable, to the pub. And so there was no power, and so there was no stream. And then we tried to do a stream here, and we hit...
We spent, 4 hours trying to get our audio set up? Poor Tim was sweating trying to get the audio set up. And then eventually, after, 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
I was like, Austin, why don't we just stream this? And we did.
And we did.
And
so,
it was a magical wonderland. And then we tried to play Space Team.
That didn't work either.
So... There's been, let's say there's been some failure this week, but there was a success. I got to do something I have always dreamed of doing
this week.
I got to speak with the legendary Shigeru Miyamoto.
Damn.
And it was amazing and wonderful. I also got to speak with Reggie Fils-Aimé from Nintendo.
You got the name right. Nice work.
I hope I did.
Say, like,
I can
Reggie.
Never, I can never spell that name correctly. Yeah.
Filet-Man.
Fils-Aimé.
Reggie Filet-Man.
Filet-Man, yes.
Okay.
Legendary Filet-Man, yes. And they were both so wonderful and so lovely, and it was really, really exciting. I went to see Super Mario Run, which is sort of the first kind of real mobile game. Obviously, Pokemon Go was a game, but this is like the first like.
But that wasn't made by Nintendo either. That was made by Niantic
yeah.
with the Pokemon Company, which is like only partially owned by Nintendo. So this was like an actual.
This is like
Nintendo
in-house
joint.
Nintendo EAD making the game.
It is not funny necessarily, but like I think that it is interesting. That the first thing they did was, like, in such a well-worn genre.
Sure.
In the mobile space. Like, they didn't just say, like, we're going to make a regular Mario game. They said, like, we're going to make a runner. You know how runners work on phones.
Yeah. Yep.
How is it?
But it's actually really awesome. It's basically an actual Mario platformer with the input simplified.
Okay.
But they designed around that, and they were sort of very, very keen on letting me know that, like, the Mario Brain Trust actually made this game. This was made by, like, Miyamoto and several other people on the team, like the core Mario team, the folks who made the new Super Mario Brothers games and so on. Like, that's the actual team.
And that's the aesthetic. It does have, like, the new Super Mario Brothers aesthetic.
And they specifically said they went with that because it's that team, and they're comfortable working with that. Sort of even despite the nostalgia of, you know, the NES Classic and, you know, Mario Maker and things like that, they were like, no, we, you know, this is how we've been working for a while. We're going to kind of go with this.
Right, sure.
So it's actually really fun and pretty robust. That was the thing I was worried about, that it would be like, you know, an endless runner. What you think of when you think of endless runners, not that there are not any good endless runners.
Right,
there
right.
certainly are. It's just
you thought
oftentimes,
it would be a skin on like a mid-tier endless runner, exactly. which is like a low-tier Nintendo game
yeah,
at that
yeah.
point.
But it's like a real proper Mario game. It's just the controls are simplified. You tap sort of once quickly to do like a little hop, and you hold it down a little bit longer to jump further. But okay. it's everything is really contextual. So there are ways.
Is it a short jump and a long jump, or is it like analog, so to speak?
It's a short jump and a long jump.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually pretty. It's pretty intuitive. I was kind of getting around things pretty quickly, and Mario will actually also automatically jump on like small enemies, so like little Goombas and little Koopas. He'll kind of hop over them, so you can decide to jump on them to get that extra bit of height, or you can kind of just let Mario run through that aspect of it.
Gotcha.
Which is really cool. It actually does give you sort of a lot of choices. And, you know, there are things like challenge coins that you can get. You have to actually find, like, secret paths and kind of go different ways. There's actually a lot going on here. So it's like a proper platformer. It just happens to be a little bit simplified in terms of directional.
Did you see that you're not going to be able to play this game on an airplane?
What?
No.
It requires an internet connection.
No.
That's really frustrating for a lot
of
reasons.
It's awful, because it's a really fun game.
Because actually, do you know what else that means you can't do? You can't play it on the subway.
Oh, that's where I want to play it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, they claimed, there's an interview with Mashable in which Miyamoto talks about the fact that the game requires internet connection because of piracy? Like, there's something like a very loose justification for
Bad.
Why they're doing this, and they also claim that part of the reason they're launching on iOS first is also because of piracy, which actually has a little more legitimacy.
Sure.
I would understand
that on Android.
Sure.
I would understand that, but not the internet thing.
Is it storing all the levels? Is it just pulling down levels from the cloud?
I guess that's possible.
Whatever the explanation is, it's bad. Because
no,
like
not great.
The definition of like a mobile game is that you can play it wherever you want.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Well, now I'm very sad.
That's a bummer.
I've become sad.
That's frustrating because like it seems like the basic, like I said earlier, it sounded like the gist of it was something that like, oh yeah, we wrap our heads around why people like mobile games.
Yes. Very much so. And there's a piece we just had go up right at noon that was me speaking to Miyamoto about specifically designing around the screen and around tapping. They thought a lot about like, oh, for making a mobile game, should we do swipes? Should we do sort of the gestures people usually do? And they're like, no, we want this to actually be something you play with one hand anywhere you are. He even talked about like, this is a great game to play on a train. So I'm like, I guess if the train has internet.
As long as you have a data connection.
Right, as long as the train is above ground.
Yeah, right.
I guess.
I could play it on the M, but not the L.
Right, right. Great.
M, not L. Mario, not Luigi. All right, I see the conspiracy now.
Oh
now I understand what's going on. You can't play as Luigi in the game,
someone,
by the way.
Someone stop, so. Danielle.
Somebody kill me now.
I'm doing my best every day.
Somebody kill me now.
Part of what I'm excited about this game, other than the fact that like it's a like Nintendo Nintendo quality mobile game, which is just sort of a lot different than sort of the the lower bar of expectations we often have for mobile stuff, is that I don't find Endless Runners to be like compelling at all.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy competing for a high score. Like that's not. I like having a goal, and like that's part of the reason I was excited about this, because when I saw it was a runner, I was like, oh no, they're gonna make this really fantastic feeling platforming game on mobile, and then it's just gonna be you fighting a high score. And then they said, oh, there's a story mode with like concrete levels, and we're gonna come out with, you know, level packs. Like that got me excited because I want the elegance of Nintendo
handcrafted
on mobile
design
platform with
the
structure around it.
Yes.
With good level design. Yes, exactly.
I hope it's good despite the connection thing.
Yeah, me too.
I'm curious.
I agree. I really enjoyed what I played. Obviously, I played a demo. It wasn't like the whole game, but everything felt like an actual sort of new Super Mario Brothers style,
And you can read that story on waypoint.vice.com right now.
Sure
there
can,
are a
right
bunch
now.
Of other things, too. Like, you also interviewed Reggie.
Yes.
And also, you got them both to tell you which Nintendo characters they would have a drink with.
Yeah, that's right. You send Danielle into the into the interviews, and you're going to get those burning questions answered. Hey, you know, I it was really funny because Mr. Miyamoto was, like, he kind of laughed about it. He's like, oh, I don't really drink beer. And then he got, like, really quiet and really serious. He's like, oh, who would it be? Like, he really, like, looked around the room for a second and was like, Star Fox. Fox McCloud. Like, he would have the best stories.
He would
and I
have
was just
dope
like,
stories.
Yeah, that's right, he would.
What about you two? What did you decide? Who would you drink with? Which Nintendo character would you have a beer with?
Who did I say? I said KK Slider, because I could see the two of us sipping whiskey until the sun comes up and he's just strumming on his guitar.
That's you good. Can dag it up with him. You know, you could keytar, he'd be on the guitar.
That doesn't happen until about 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Good.
Until you get close to 4.
Once you hit 4, that's it.
That's
bad decisions. What about you, Danielle?
You know, I was actually thinking Bowser, because I really want to, like, have a heart-to-heart about why he's always ruining Mario's vacations.
Yeah.
That's the plot of every game. Somebody went on vacation, and somebody else ruined it.
Do you know the fan theory about Bowser?
No. What fan
theory? You don't know about this?
I mean, I know of a few fan theories.
Dad Bowser, and how, like, Bowser and Mario are just trying to give their kids a good time?
Well, that's part of the vacation thing.
Right. So, like,
always going on vacations.
So, I think the theory originated from either Mario 3, where it has, like, the like, theater kind of
framing device.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And the notion was, like, oh, hey, or, like, Mario Kart, same thing. It's, like, it's Mario and Bowser getting together to give everybody else, like, a fun time, and Bowser's, like, playing up being the villain the way, like, a dad will be like, oh, I'm Darth Vader. I'm evil Bowser. But really, we're all friends, and, like, that's why they can go, like, do sports together and do parties and
it
all
makes
that.
Makes sense.
I think that's my headcanon.
Well, I would get to the bottom of that.
I see.
Yeah, you know, I'd be like, hey, Bowser. And plus, it feels like he'd be fun to drink with. Like, Bowser could party.
He could party. So. I really want to have a drink with the Ganon from Wind Waker.
Oh.
Because, like, at the end of Wind Waker, that Ganon has this, like, long, like, speech about the winds moving, like, the winds came to my desert country with, they were harsh and brutal in the day and, you know, cold at night and killed my people and now I'm sad and, like, I think he just needs a bud.
He needs a friend.
He needs a literal bud, like a Budweiser?
He needs like a bud.
He needs another kind of bud.
He also needs a little bud, I think.
He needs all the buds.
He just come through. We're in the brick house.
A bud in each hand, you know.
Exactly.
Use your imagination.
Connect the dots. I think that Ganon could just, I bet you he has just, like, some smart-ass things to say about the world and history. He's also old. I think that Ganon is also the Ocarina of Time Ganon, which means, like, he's seen a lot. And I just want to talk to him about, you know, what's cyclical in history. I think, like, a nice whiskey. I'm not a whiskey guy, but I think he is.
He is. So he is.
I would suck it up and do whiskey to hang out with that Ganon.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Anything else going on this week? You guys playing anything? Patrick, have you started in on
more? It's just more Final Fantasy. Yesterday, I made the transition. There is this was talked about before the game came out.
Mm-hmm.
There is a specific chapter in which the game swaps from being an open world sort of thing to a far more linear sort of story experience. Like, there's a moment when the story kind of pivots, and then it's like, oh, it's story time. And I kind of hit this moment in the open world. I talked about it in the second part of the letter series that we ran this week, in which I was doing a lot of side quests that weren't going anywhere. Like, they were just like, hey, go get a potato. You got the potato, now go get a tomato. And I'm like, okay, this and
how does this go? How does this end? Is it just going to be a yam next?
Yeah, like, and that's what I wrote in the letter was that the game doesn't communicate really well. Like, is this a side quest that you only need to be doing to get additional experience and money? Like, if that's the case, then I'll just stop doing it because I have plenty of both. But is this a side quest where I'm going to discover, like, a cool dungeon? Is this a side quest that's going to get me some unique weapons? And I just wasn't finding myself doing any of that stuff for, like, the better part of 5 hours.
And
so,
like,
I thought, well, I'll
pedal
go
the metal.
Yeah, so, like, I'll jump into the story, and they come up with a conceit that allows you to go back. Like, there's a very clear, it says, like, hey, you're not going to be able to come back here, but maybe you can come back later. Like, the game's not very clear. And then, like, you meet a character that lets you talk with a dog and go into your dreams and then dream of being back in the open world. And then you can still go complete quests over there in the dog dream.
Oh, that's, I think that's the subtitle of the next Kingdom Hearts game.
Yep,
Kingdom Hearts 222 over 30 Dog Dream, I'm pretty
Dog
sure
Dream.
Is the
yeah.
It's the crossover thing.
Yeah, that's definitely. Disney Dog Dreams.
Disney Dog Dreams. 3D.
3D.
Yeah, 3D. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's yep. 3DS game only.
I love it.
That's so I'm like at that same point where I guess you're a little bit further ahead than me. Like I'm not at the point where I could just like zip into the kind of switch in structure, but I'm definitely getting to the point where it's like I can't tell if this is a real thing or not. And it's a shame because some stuff definitely has some of the side quests do have the attention that lead to a big boss fight or like a cool dungeon. And I almost want a spoiler-free hint guide that's just like, all right, do these 20 quests. These are the ones to pay that you have to do. If you want to do other side stuff, go for it. But like, you know, this is the one where there's like a cool cutscene or where you and Gladio will get into an argument or like whatever it is. Like I want the stuff that's really story heavy.
You need
in
a skip
game.
List, basically.
I need a skip list.
This.
Exactly. I want the machete order of Final
Fantasy. Or some of my favorite combat in the game are doing the hunts, but the game goes out of its way to make it
fucking hate
so
this.
Difficult to do the hunts in this game.
Let me take multiple hunts at once.
No, it's not
Let
even that.
Me
it's not
do
even
that.
It's not even that you cannot go multiple hunts at once. It's
I think it is, but
well, but it's that the hunts are not universal between NPCs. Mm. So the hunts mm-hmm. that are scattered throughout the game are scattered right. between different vendors, and those vendors do not give you any indication if you are going to be level appropriate for those hunts. So you can spend 3 minutes sitting through a loading screen, run into a town, go right. to an NPC and be like, maybe they've got a hunt for me. It's like, oh no, it's all level 60 hunts. It's like, well, better randomly roll the dice on like the next NPC and hope that one gives me
Or the other thing happens for me, which is like, that's why I want multiple hunts. It's like, if I go the other way where it's like, oh, I'm going to go back to this place and clean up the last 5 hunts that I skipped there.
Right.
I'm level
right.
30 now. I want to take all of the level 7s. Like, it won't be a problem. Just let me just go like zip around and get them really quick. That would be preferable.
Yeah.
It is not preferable.
It's just because you fight the coolest, biggest monsters on the hunts, and it allows you to like really dig into the combat. Because right now, what's happening is I did so much of the side stuff before mm-hmm. I'd made the pivot into the story that the story difficulty has been just nerfed. Like I'm just coasting through every single battle because I'm like basically 10 to 15 levels higher than I should be for what's happening, and the game doesn't adjust for that, which is fine because I mean that's part of the consequence of all the open world stuff I did. But it's like
totally.
When I want to take a break and like go challenge myself and go do some fun combat stuff, I'm basically looking at half an hour to try and find something to do, and that's just makes me angry that I have to spend this much time finding the good stuff because it's there, but the game just puts up a ton of barriers to actually engaging with it.
Maybe they'll patch it like they're patching the story.
I bet the hunt stuff will get – you know, you joke, but I bet that hunt stuff is so obvious and it's a complaint that I've seen everywhere. That's going to happen in a patch in the next like couple of months, but I'll have finished the game. You know, I'm going to finish the game probably in the next week. And probably missed out on a bunch of stuff because that stuff happened so much later.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to push through and probably finish it up also. Like I said at the end of this letter, I was like, you can hold me to the fact that I'm going to play more of this game. I am just enjoying being in this game, and it is able to do both things I need, which is like, oh, it's the weekend and I have 3 or 4 hours open. I can really pay attention and do a story thing. And it's the like, I got home from the office. It is 10:30 p.m. I need to like just become a vegetable for the next hour and a half and just like zzz, buzz.
A cactar. A cactar.
A cactar, specifically a cactar. A potato and then a tomato and then a yam, one and then another. And I'll complete the quest by being the tomato that the diner owner needs.
Yes.
Please.
Aspire to that.
Exactly. And so I just need that like – that fed to me, and I can just do side stuff while listening to a podcast or watching something else. So to be clear, I didn't mean like someone in a vegetative state. I meant literally a vegetable that you would eat.
Your vegetable.
Apologies. That's
in
not,
the game. Yes.
Right. Yes. Other than that, I'm actually playing like I actually played the opposite experience of that sort of like just chill and just do some fun side stuff yesterday, which is I played the Division's new DLC finally called Survival. And that is really cool. I'm definitely going to play more of that. I ended up buying The Division and like the season pass on PC because that's where my friends are playing it. And I already have it on PS4, so I could have just gotten the DLC there and had my character and all that. But the way survival works, it doesn't matter what level you are. Everybody goes in like level 0, basically. So survival is set in the same basic map of Manhattan that The Division is set in.
Okay.
And each match is an hour long. It's a multiplayer thing where I'm going to say 24 players join a server. There's PvE and PvP variations. I played one of each. The goal is to get to the center of the map to find like a cure for this virus and to get out. The thing that separates it are a couple of things. One, there's a huge blizzard happening. Oh. Like obviously the Division takes place in a world that's been hit by cold and snow. It's like it takes place on the December right before the holidays. You know, the virus spread on Black Friday.
Life was interrupted.
That's when life was interrupted. Then, right? So it's okay. It's the middle of the winter already. But in survival, it's like a blizzard is happening currently, and so your visibility is only a few feet ahead of you, or like it changes depending on how the weather is going. Like sometimes it clears up and you can see a block or two, and other times it's like I can barely see anything. And taking notes from other survival games, there are things like hunger, thirst, and temperature. And so, like, you need to go hang out near little barrel fires to get your temperature up before you go out on, like, another little excursion.
That's pretty awesome.
And you're infected.
Oh, no.
With this disease. Welcome to Waypoint Radio. We like Far Cry 2. Give me a game where I'm infected with a disease.
I want to be sick.
And manage that shit. I got to be sick. what you end up doing is, like, And you start with no gear. You start with, like, a pistol, and that is it. And, like, a piece of cloth. And so the game is going around.
What else do you need, Austin?
Yeah,
that's
really?
All I need to
that's
save the world.
It.
Let's go.
Go into my bunker. So, all I've got is cloth and pistols.
That's it.
I'm ready for Trump. That's all I need.
That's all you need is your Trump kit.
That's it.
You know?
You're like, where's the water? Where's the gas? I got cloth.
Don't need it.
Motherfucker.
I can burn it. It's fuel. I can eat it. Give me some leather to chew on. That's cloth. So you have to go out and like find in the different areas of the map. There are just like backpacks and there's loot that you can find. And sometimes you find like a gun and it's like, whoa, I got like an exotic gun. Cause video games, exotic gun. It's a gold gun.
Yeah.
Or you find more cloth or tools or weapon parts or gear parts or whatever. And so it's this like super tight version of something like DayZ or Rust that's match based instead of being, and so I guess there's other things out there like H1Z1, King of the Kill or whatever it's called.
I think it's called King of the Kill,
which is also like match based in this way. But I haven't seen anything that's like this. There are moments where it's so tense, partially because any sort of survival game like this is already tense, and partially because a number of like just the audiovisual polish on this game is already really strong. So things like hearing a gunshot in the distance, like you just like freeze up because it's you die, you're out of the match, right? Oh, and as people die, it also just like the countdown of like 20 agents remaining, 17 players remaining, like three players, and like as they die, it's a really cool like battle royale style thing. And there's lots of also, of course, like are you cool? Like I see a person, we're both fighting a really hard NPC together, but it's PvP, so we don't know if we're gonna like backstab each other. It does that thing. It feels a lot like, and I saw somebody else say this on Twitter, what the Division's Dark Zones should have been to begin with.
Yeah.
It's because you get into the Dark Zone eventually after you craft like your mask and all that other stuff, and you have to extract with your stuff. I did not extract with my stuff.
Oh, no.
What happened for me in my first game, two things. One, I wasted a bunch of ammo like an idiot because I was walking past Madison Square Garden and I heard the sound of gunfire. And I was like, oh, shit, there's someone coming over there. Throw a grenade, start shooting. There was not someone over there. It was a generator making a weird clicking noise that was fucked up. And, like, that alone
kill that generator.
Is enough
I don't,
to
Austin,
be, like...
you are not on my team in the apocalypse. Like, you have already evidenced that you are incapable. You're gone. You're off the team. You weren't even on the team. You haven't been kicked off because you weren't signed up.
I can
fail the first
coach,
test.
Coach, let me... I'll like, edit your post-apocalyptic misses. I'll make sure that they're good. When you're the postman, someone has to edit the mail in
that's,
the future.
That's a good point.
That's, I just want to make sure the letters that
when I'm dropping my thumb drive
versions.
Podcasts right. All over
yes!
the country.
Exactly. So then I ended up getting into the Dark Zone, and it was like me and eight other players. Every time someone dies, it's like this amazing, like, 20 players left, 19 players left. And
that's
sometimes
good.
You hear the gunfight off in the distance, and other times you don't. So eventually I'd gotten this really good shotgun, a really good like sniper rifle thing. I was like, okay, I'm feeling pretty good. And the enemies are all really tough because they are all like higher level and have good equipment. And so every little...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Gunfight feels really tense, and you have to be really strategic, and it really plays up the elements of the game's like cover-based combat system in a way that makes it feel a lot more lethal and a lot more like scary.
So you don't have to have really played the main game to jump into this.
As soon as you get to the main like hub, it's available.
I played maybe 15 hours.
You can jump into it right now because you go in at level zero. No one has stuff when they start. You literally have to craft special abilities to use. Like if you want to use pulse or use like the little seeker bomb, the stuff that are that you just level up and get in survival. You find equipment and craft those things. which is really cool because you end up going through – it's almost like a roguelike in that way of just like what's my build going to be this time? Like okay, I got this cool shotgun. I guess that means I'll be an up-close person, so I'll make sure I have the heal ability because I'll be behind cover and I'll pop the heal ability that heals people around me or whatever. That stuff is really cool. So I got into the Dark Zone and I had a really good run of like I had this really good shotgun and all the enemies I was finding had shields and axes. They were like the firemen
gang or whatever.
And the shotgun is good things against that. Like yeah, get up close to me. Come on. I got this. And then I killed two of them. I chased another two around the corner, and I like, was lining up my shot to like, I was like, I got this. I'm going to get a lot of good gear off of this. And then bullets started whizzing past my head, and I turned around. Of course, there was another player behind me.
It was a generator.
And it was a generator, but it came to life. And it was generator, right? The player,
Bastion.
It was Bastion.
Post-apocalyptic Bastion came in
for me.
Oh no!
And I got, and then I was like, it got to that point of like rooting for the other NPCs to kill him, and they did.
Yeah.
And then it was just our two dead bodies next to each other because there's a 5-minute window in which someone could come resurrect you.
Oh wow!
That didn't happen. Instead, someone came and looted both of our corpses.
And teabagged you.
Yes,
yeah,
but you can totally. play with a team. I'm really excited to go back into it this weekend. I might try to do a stream if I have time. We'll see.
Yeah,
that sounds interesting. Like when we get some time off the holidays, that seems like a game I want to jump into and check out.
I think you would respond well to it.
Yeah,
is what I'll say. So it's definitely reminded me that I had an okay time with the Division, and also has made me want more things like that.
Yes.
I like little handcrafted experiences that shift your basic experience with the game. Do you know what I mean? Like we've talked, Patrick, about what's the Red Dead horror one?
Undead Nightmare.
I think that's a really cool idea. I like this because it's like, oh, hey, you know these basic mechanics, but let's really throw a wrench in what the play feels like. So really high on it right now. If you can tell.
Yeah.
And I'll actually pivot from that into a question we got. I did an AMA yesterday, an Ask Me Anything.
It was really good.
On the Reddit platform, reddit.com/r/IAMA.
Yes.
In which I got a bunch of great questions from the community. I'm really appreciative that the community came out and showed support and like asked good questions instead of bad questions. and I didn't get to answer all of the questions. And one of them was really good, and I was like, oh, man, I really want to answer this, but I need more time to think about it. So I'm going to read it, and we can all answer it together.
Yeah, yeah.
This comes in from Sam, who writes, people talk often about a game having good level design, but it doesn't seem like the collective that as a collective we often focus on an individual level when we talk about games. Even though sometimes you get some attention spent on things like Clockwork Mansion, Heather Alexandra just did that piece on Kotaku, or like Effect and Cause that you just wrote about, Patrick. So just simple, what are some of our favorite levels ever in games and why? What sticks out as some of your favorite levels in games? Like we do talk a lot about like, oh, wow, that game has good level design. So like, what do we mean by that, and what are some great examples?
For me, what first came to mind was the first level in the original Deus Ex, the Statue of Liberty stage, which we take for granted games like Dishonored that like take the, you know, in the case of Dishonored, like very directly took the lineage of Deus Ex as Harvey Smith worked on the original. But like we sort of take for granted this idea of like being in map designs in which the player is allowed to approach them from multiple angles. Like that is just a thing that is in a ton of games these days.
Right.
But Deus Ex was like a huge pioneer in the idea of like approaching an environment, and how you get to that endpoint is not going from A to B. It's realizing that A splinters off to a bunch of different, you know, letters in between. So like that level sticks out to me because it was this first example, at least in my experience, of you would finish it, But in the experience of finishing that stage, you would pick up on, oh, I could have done all these other things. Now I'm excited to reload that level. I mean, the demo for Deus Ex was that Statue of Liberty stage. I remember playing it. It came on a PC Gamer demo disc, which used to be like the happiest moment of every month was the PC Gamer demo disc, because it's like I couldn't afford many games, so it's like I was getting a bunch of games each month. And I must have played that Deus Ex demo like, you know, two dozen times, each time encountering a different way, maybe subtly different way, but it was like this masterful early example of empowering the player in a way that I just had not seen in a game before. So it's like I always that level itself cemented why I love those types of games going forward. Like totally. That level is responsible for like a lot of the games I enjoy now and have over in like the 15 years since. So that's the level that stuck out to me, because it was this early example of a level that just sort of like defined a player experience. And I think that's what like a lot of good level design is like defining a player experience in some way. Doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, multiple open angles, open,
right?
And
it
stuff
can be,
like
it
that.
Can be the opposite of that. Yeah. Of right. Just like Mario 1-1 is super good at teaching you how to play Mario.
Yeah, it's a secret tutorial, right? But like there's no text explaining how you do things.
Right, yeah. Exactly. How
it
about
teaches
you?
You. For me, because I'm such a big platformer fan, I think it's usually a balance of several elements, like risk and reward, mm-hmm. and surprises.
Okay.
And also sort of like a good teaching mechanic. So there's a level in Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze.
Huh, surprise!
I know, it's shocking.
Surprise!
It's like a savanna level. It looks like this sort of very beautiful kind of like, you know, savanna-y mm-hmm. area, and it's on fire. And there's sort of a mechanic teaching you how to use a certain element to put out the fires. And then you have to start sort of swinging on vines around that. And it's sort of like it teaches you this mechanic in a fairly safe way at the very beginning of the level. And then it starts twisting on that and twisting on that and twisting on that and making it more challenging each time. And also, with that game and with, you know, sort of really good platformers in general, I love it when it teases you a little bit. There's a secret area here. There's a secret element here. You know, experiment and play around and find those things. It's sort of like this rich little space that I enjoy exploring mm-hmm. and will be rewarded for exploring. And I will also say, regarding Dishonored 2, I just got to what I think is the best level in the game, which is the sort of time travel-y. I won't spoil anything, but that is, I think, even better. Patrick, you said this, actually, that it's actually even cooler than the Clockwork Mansion. So, again, it's doing risk-reward, and it's doing secret surprises, and it's doing all those things in a 3D space.
Right.
For me, it's all about that. And flow. And flow is a really, really important part, especially in anything platformery. For me, it's like, it needs to have exciting moments, and it needs to have like take your breath moments.
Okay.
Like it's kind of a combination of all these elements. It's
that
you know it when you see it. That
specifically explains to me why you're a Donkey Kong Country Tropical
yes.
or like Donkey Kong Country in general fan.
Yeah.
Where like that game is a lot faster than I think a lot of the early Mario or the Donkey Kong Country series in general.
Much
is like
faster.
A little faster than Mario the Mario
more
games
about momentum
were,
than precision.
But not as like out of control as the early Sonic games were.
For sure.
Nice middle ground there.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's momentum. A good momentum.
Yeah.
And flow.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, what about you?
I don't know. Like, so I think given that you've covered those two things, I think I'm going to go the far opposite direction, right? Which is like closely structured like gameplay flow, really great design that suggests all the possibility spaces for the player. I think those are both good elements of this. But I also just like things that communicate – levels that communicate something about – the world and the environment in games that have stories, but or something about the game's aesthetics in games that are about just like a cool aesthetic experience. So like the final area in Rez is super good at like being just this overwhelming aesthetic, like just blow to the face, just like this amazing like combo of visual design and musical cues, but also just like when I think about games, like my favorite standout levels are things in like Streets of Rage 2 that have foregrounds and backgrounds that communicate a scale that isn't really there, that you can't necessarily go explore, but that situate the limited action you have inside of some broader context. The same thing with like this is a very specific call out, but like Ranger X is another Sega Genesis game. It's a mech game. It's one of the first mech games I played. That it takes place in cities and like, it takes place all over the place. And you're a mech, and there's a level in which you're kind of climbing a big skyscraper. And at the start of the level, there are little people running around. And that's like one of those touches that like the fact that it's a skyscraper and the fact that there are these like people-sized people who are like at your feet running around that suggests
I love
people-sized
people.
People-sized people. But you're a robot-sized robot.
That's right. That's right. Good.
Man, you know. Austin, you're good with language.
I do okay. I do okay at robots.
You got the words.
I got the words. I found them. I found those words. And like that's the thing is like – and so like level design that helps kind of communicate the stuff that would otherwise go unnoticed or that would otherwise fall away because of the focus on just flow or just, you know, player expression. Like I like those things a lot. But I also just love levels that color the world a little bit. I've spoken before about – and here's the thing that's like not necessarily a level, quote unquote. But I think we should think about these things in the same way because they are similarly designed. But like the path from Balmora to the city of Vivec in Elder Scrolls Morrowind isn't a level by any means. Like it wasn't just like, oh, you go into a loading screen and then you have this section of the game loaded. Though there might have been a loading screen at that point still, at least a soft load. But like it's set up to be. There's not much combat challenge. You fight some of the cliff racers, which are these terrible pterodactyl things. Maybe some of like the weird bug monsters, but like mostly it's like it's the first long walk you'll make in that game through a bunch of different kind of like biomes. You'll walk past Caldera, which is this like rocky outcropped city. You'll walk past a fort. You'll walk past like through a bunch of different things, and on the way to Vivec, which is this like floating city near the ocean. You know, past these big, beautiful, like, pink and blue, like, bug monster cows.
You'll
pass farms. And, like, that, it was just, like, a really good – it's almost like if there had been a soundtrack to that, like, the way going to Mexico was in Red Dead Redemption, it would be one of those great, like, traversal experiences. I think that's also a great level design thing, even though we're not talking about, like, intricately placed – clever level design.
Right, the skeleton stories. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and then the other one to shout out, and like I'm just not a pro at this, so it's hard for me to break this down, but like the great multiplayer maps of the world, right? Like the two forts and
Facing Worlds
and
Unreal Tournament.
Facing Worlds, totally. Like those things are
hell yeah, Facing
very
World.
Carefully designed and really fun. Robert Yang.
Encourage that flow as
right.
well.
Robert
you know,
Yang
like,
does,
you know, like DE Dust in Counter-Strike.
Right, exactly. Yep. Robert Yang does a class or at least a session on this, on level design at NYU Game Center, and he's made some great tweets about it that are just like pretty simple, but just like here's what simple level design looks like versus complex level design. I'll try to find that tweet and retweet it after we're done with the podcast today so people can see what I'm talking about, because it's one of those things that's like, oh, right, yeah, it would take – you would have to be super smart to design a really good Halo competitive level. Like,
absolutely.
There's a lot going on there with the levels twisting back in interesting ways that have multiple different vectors of, like, attack and counterattack. And it's a fucking art, man.
It is.
Like, yeah. It seems tough.
Also, shout out to the Tower of Latria level in Demon's Souls.
Totally. Totally.
Hell yeah.
That hits all of these things, I think.
Demon, like, it's – if you – you know,
shit.
I played Demon's Souls last. You know, I played Dark Souls 2, then went to Demon's Souls before Bloodborne came out. And all that's a weird order to play them in, especially mechanically. Mm-hmm. Like, the Tower of Latria is, like, probably the best area in any of those games. Probably? Maybe?
It's up there.
It's certainly in the top three.
It's the only one that I've ever really felt like it was fair to be like, the Demon's Soul real Demon's Soul starts here. Like, yeah, no, Latria is that for sure. but it does a bunch of cool shit.
It's and it's so creepy. Like, it's a horror game stuck inside of Demon's Souls, the Souls games are already sort of like, you know, oppressive and weird, but like, Tower of Latria is like, it's just, ugh. Dank.
It's grimy, it's and the stage. First time that you, the first time that you get caught by one of the jailers is like,
ugh.
The jailers are these like, I think that the D&D term for them would be Ithalid, I'm pretty sure.
Ithalid.
Which is like a squid-faced Cthulhu man.
Okay, okay.
But like a person.
Is it like in Bloodborne when you get taken by the Hyperion?
Yes, those are like
folks.
The Hyperion folks, the mushroom people, the spore people are like, is that the spore people called in Bloodborne? The like mushroomy people.
No,
like,
wait. Those are the alieny mushroomy people. I'm
okay,
thinking
sorry.
About when you first
the bag. Yeah, the big hulking dude with the bag.
Those
sort
guys.
Of like that, but they actually look more like the spore people who like and they put like the needle in you from their mouth.
Good.
Like they grab you. The In fact, I hadn't made that connection before actually. But the Demon Souls jailers like just chase after you. They shoot you with a thing that paralyzes you, which is already so smart and good because through your first level in Boletaria. you kind of learn, like, oh, my biggest advantage, two things. One, I can block anything that comes at me if I'm careful. And two, I can dodge stuff.
Yep.
And like, no, dog, you super cannot get hit by this because that will make you vulnerable. And like, losing your ability to move, that vulnerability is fresh and good and like terrifying, like really scary. And then they like grab you and put their like long proboscis like into your face and then just like
it's a bad way to die.
It's a bad way to die.
That doesn't sound like fun.
And that's just the first hallway, right? Like that's literally you turn the corner like what's that guy? Oh, he doesn't have a sword. This won't be a problem. Yeah, dog, it'll be a problem. It's going to be a problem. And so that's also good. And then that boss is also really unique that level.
It's a boss, we can spoil that boss, but like, yeah, it's one of the most unique things in Soul. It doesn't work as much now, like, because I played it. So anyway, so I'll explain how it works. Like, the final boss, like, usually in the Souls games, you're used to fighting these, like, giant sort of, like, creatures and things like that, these big monstrosities. And the thing at the end of the Tower of Latria is they summon a player, like, from the world that you have to fight. So you can avoid player versus player fights in the majority of the Souls games. It's not something you have to engage with necessarily, but they forced you to fight another player, and it's brilliant, which means like you don't know what you're going to go up against every time you walk into the boss arena. It sucks if you play it 6 years after it comes out and there's no one playing, because what it means is that you fight an NPC,
okay,
and the NPC is not hard, so you just kind of walk through it. When it was explained to me how it was supposed to work, I was like, oh, that's really brilliant.
Right. I forgotten about that part. I was actually talking about the idol, the fool's idol, where you have to kill another different NPC in the world to make the actual – this is like the tower, like the first – part a boss.
Yeah.
You're right that the monk is the last of the like yellow-headed thing.
Yeah.
But the first one is just like a puzzle boss of just like, oh no, actually you have to go find this thing somewhere else in the world to kill to make this thing vulnerable. It's just like they poured a lot of heart into making that whole place feel confusing while still being navigable. And that's a really cool feeling that sometimes like at its most frustrating Dark Souls, the Souls series gets away from that and like it's like, oh no, we're just gonna make it dark and poisonous and you're just gonna be miserable.
Yeah, Blighttown is not a good stage. Like Blighttown is bad.
No,
it's just bad.
It's bad. People in the chat, I will shout out the chat. We're doing this live on twitch.tv/waypoint. And people in the chat definitely talked about like Sense Fortress, which is another Souls level that's like really strong. I think I really like the college in Bloodborne a lot, actually.
Yes.
There's a lot. That whole series
is some
good fucking levels.
The snowy castle.
That level's
Forsaken
good as hell.
Forsaken Castle something. I love that area so much.
I think we go on and
so
on.
So much
This could quickly become a Souls cast, but we should probably do something else.
I'm like mad we didn't... I'm glad that the Souls series is theoretically wrapped. Is like I'm happy to see things. I like when things close and end. And like when they do so under the control of the people who poured so much heart and soul into them. No pun intended. Heart and blood would have been just as bad.
They put
sweat
so
and
much blood
heart and soul
into their borns. Yes.
I like seeing creators be able to be like, all right, this is where I'm done with this thing. I'm going to move on. But I am bummed that we haven't had like a new Souls game come out while all three of us.
Well, I mean, FromSoftware's already said they're working on a Souls type game, which is collectively thought to be Bloodborne 2. I hope it's not as much
Me
as I would
too.
Like another Bloodborne. I would. It's in the same way that I'm glad in a way there's Last of Us 2. You know, I always prefer when the most creative people in our industry build new things. So it's like, well, I'll be excited for Bloodborne 2. Hell yeah. Like, would I be more excited if it was like Armored Souls, the game that I'm just going to say over and over again until I will it into an existence?
I want is an Armored Core game.
I think you would die.
Game.
I think you would actually
fucking
die.
Like imagine, let me actually pitch it to you, because this is what I want. I want a game. I'm talking about scale and flavor and color. I want a game at two scales. I want the mech to be like this huge, destroyed, post-apocalyptic overworld, which a lot of the Armored Core games have. Maybe with some like one remaining city where you can go to like see people or whatever. And you're going off into ruins and stuff. Imagine the world sort of like Darksiders or something, where it's been like torn apart. But it's so huge. Like it's weird future skyscrapers in the distance. And you go there, and then like you're fighting other mechs, and you're going into like mech-sized dungeons and stuff. that are like big canyon like walkways and shit like that, you know, huge massive underground caves, and then you reach places where you have to get out of your mech and it just like go into this office building.
So you're saying that you want Hidetaka Miyazaki to make a game with people-sized people and robot-sized robots.
Perfect.
That's what I want.
Damn, we solved it.
And then we solved it.
We did it.
Give me a call. From Software, come get your boy. I got a game to make. God damn. If you have questions, you can send them to gamingadvice.com with the subject questions. We will answer those questions if they come up in the question bucket.
That's right.
Thank you to Tim Barnes, our audio producer.
You can find Tim
at TimBarnes451 on Twitter. Thank you, Danielle. Where can people find you on Twitter?
Danielle R.I.
Patrick.
Find me at Patrick Klopek.
We are at Waypoint on Twitter. I am at Austin_Walker. You can also find out the name and info of the person who does our intro music, our intro and outro music, Boen, at waypoint.zone/BOEN. I set that up.
Perfect.
You can find all the stuff we do at waypoint.vice.com, at digitalpyramids.com, at waypoint.zone, at bazinga.zone. You already know what it is. It is the weekend.
Thank God.
Woo! It's the freaking weekend.
Yes.
Maybe I'm going to have me some fun.
Yes.
Which means you're going to sleep.
I'm going to sleep. What are you doing this weekend? I'm going to play some video game. I'm going to play some Final Fantasy XV. I'm going to play more of The Division Survival. I'm going to sleep. I'm going to read some stuff, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to see if
I can get too crazy. Come on, Austin.
All right, slow down. You're right.
Don't party too hard.
Let's focus. I'm having some fun. I'm going to read a book and sleep. I'm going to do it. What are you two up to this weekend?
I'm going to Rhode Island. I'm going to see my family.
Awesome.
I'm going to play a lot of Pokemon.
That's exciting.
Most likely. A lot of Pokemon.
Who's your favorite Pokemon so far that you've caught in Sun Moon?
Oh, it's got to be Popplio.
You didn't catch Popplio. You were given Popplio.
No. He chose me.
Oh, fair.
He chose me. I lifted him gently in my arms.
You lifted him gently in your arms.
And he chose me. He gave me a little Popplio
That's
hug.
Fair. That's yeah, fair. Patrick, he chose me. What about you?
I'm hoping. I really want to play The Last Guardian. And Shadow of the Colossus are some of my favorite games. But I need to put Final Fantasy to bed. I have a feeling if I like walk away from it, like I'll
You'll
walk
lose
away
it.
From it. And
yes.
And like the story is a thing I want to walk away from, so now I just need to see it through. I need to just
get to the end.
I'm kind of actually hoping that if I put the story to bed, maybe the smarter thing is to then leave the game for a while and come back when some of the patches have come in. Like maybe they'll have streamlined some of the stuff that's frustrating. So rather than like spending like the next like four podcasts like getting upset about the hunts,
Rousing.
Maybe I just like walk away, realize I have a ton of other games to play, and see if they address some of that stuff. So I'm hoping to get that close to bed, and then I'll move on to The Last Guardian because I'm super curious about that.
Awesome. If you're listening and want to tell us what you are playing, you can hit us up again at Twitter at Waypoint or on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. Do that. I want to know. I'm curious what people are playing, so let us know. We'll respond as we find time.
Playing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And again, shout-outs to Reddit for letting us do that. Ask me anything yesterday. I will make a news story on the site that links out to it and go read some of my responses. I tried to respond to as much stuff as I could. If you ask me a question there that you didn't get an answer to and you think maybe it would be a good question bucket question, again, the address is gamingadvice.com, subject questions. We'll get to it, but first, we got to get to this weekend.
Yeah.
Peace.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.